Would you like to apply to Tulane University School of Medicine, but are you concerned about the intense competition for seats? I think there's 15,000 applications we're talking about. Don't worry, its Director of Admissions is our guest today, and he'll tell you what it takes to get in.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 569th episode of Admission Straight Talk. Thanks for tuning in. Are you ready to apply to your dream medical schools? Are you competitive at your target programs? Accepted's Med School Admissions Quiz can give you a quick reality check. Just go to accepted.com/medquiz, complete the quiz, and you'll not only get an assessment, but tips on how to actually improve your chances of acceptance. Plus, it's all free. Again, take the quiz at accepted.com/medquiz to obtain your free assessment. Our special guest today is Dr. Mike Woodson, Director of Admissions at Tulane University School of Medicine. He earned his bachelor's at Elon University and an MS in sports management from Virginia Commonwealth and his PhD in higher education and higher education administration in 2022, congratulations, from Liberty University. After working for several years in high school athletics, Dr. Woodson moved into the admissions world at Randolph Macon College. He then was assistant director of admissions at the University of Houston and came to Tulane Medical in 2017 as assistant director of admissions. In 2019, he became the director of admissions. Welcome, Dr. Woodson, to Admission Straight Talk.
Linda, it's great to be back with you. I've heard so much great things on the interview trail about your program and how it's helped students along the way, or pre-meds along the way, even gotten some great reviews about our episode before. So can't wait to chat with you again.
Thank you. Thank you for the wonderful feedback. Now, can you give us an overview for those people who didn't listen to the previous episode of Tulane Medical's program, focusing on its more distinctive aspects and elements?
Sure. So Tulane University School of Medicine, of course, it's right in the heart of downtown New Orleans, Louisiana, in the South. Our focus is mainly on really helping our community here in New Orleans. Now, we have students that come from all over. Our mission of our school is healing communities. And that's what everything about our school is focused on, whether it's curriculum, whether it's extracurricular activities, whether it's research, it's all focused on healing communities. And we're trying to do that here in the New Orleans community.
That's wonderful. It's interesting that you say you're focused on healing communities, not individuals. Normally, you normally think about doctors treating individuals, but this is a little bit different focus.
Yes. When we say healing communities, yes, individuals are part of the community, sure. But as a whole, our goal is to really help the community because communities help themselves. It can't be this big institution that's talking down to the community, talking to individuals, lecturing communities, lecturing individuals about like what they need to do. It has to be a partnership. And so it helps that Tulane is really partnering with the community in the community. Our students are living in the community. Our doctors and faculty are living in the community. So they have a vested interest in this. And so, yes, individuals are part of the community, but overall, we're really trying to focus on the healing communities.
Beautiful. Okay. What's new at Tulane since we last spoke? It's almost exactly 2 years ago.
So I say there's a couple of new things that we have going on. It doesn't really pertain per se to the medical school, but it will affect us. In the fall, we have a new nursing program that's starting. And the good thing about that is, once it goes again with our mission of healing communities, but also there's going to be a lot of curriculum and activities interaction with our med students. So they're not just learning in a silo. They're learning, yes, about the clinical aspects of medicine, the academic, the science stuff about medicine, but they're also learning how to work together. And that's the main thing, because you hear so many times, especially from people who've been or seasoned veterans in the medical force, how sometimes maybe this wall put up between physicians and nurses. And so let's just try to break that wall down and have them work together, collaborate. If you're collaborating together in the learning phase, you're hopefully they'll have that collaboration once they get out in the workforce.
So there'll be, I don't know, probably would be more practica together, nurses and doctors yes. together, maybe PAs and other members of the healthcare team.
Yes, that is correct. So when we're doing different exercises, we have our preclinical phase where we're doing classroom stuff. But within that preclinical set, we do have, we call it Foundations of Medicine. That's kind of our how to be a doctor kind of classes. And where they're learning different skills and tests. And those lessons we can see they're going to be done with our nursing students, because of course they're going to be learning the exact same thing,
sure.
Patient care and so forth. And so they're going to be learning stuff together and learning collaboration, because in a safer environment, in a learning environment, it's better to learn those skills now than when you get on the wards, you know, your third year, and then you're dealing with nurses, seasoned nurses, you know, and you just want to make sure everyone not only knows their roles, but also knows how their roles interact together. And so making sure we get that early lesson, early learning, and starting first year.
Sounds good. Now, I guess part of that early learning will probably take place in the simulation center at Tulane.
Yes. And
from my, you know, my pre-call research, it seemed, I don't know if that's brand new or if it's just been developed more. Can you touch on that?
Yes, Simpson has been around for several years now. And it focuses not only just medical school students and their education, but once again, I go back to that healing communities, we have EMS training in there. We have nurses that train in there. Also, we have our residents that train in there. So a lot of different community groups, first responders that are training in our SIM Center. And so that's where we envision most of that taking place in that SIM Center. It's a place that, yes, they're going to learn their clinical skills in a safe environment, because we want to give our students confidence. You don't want them doing their first test on a live person or doing it on each other. That's probably even worse. so we want to do it in a safe environment. Now we have different rooms in that SIM Center. We have a simulation operating room, a delivery room, emergency medicine room, and then different patient triage areas where they can learn. I mean, it looks just like a hospital. I mean, you walk into the tile floors, to the white walls, to all that, the bright, you know, the fluorescent lights and all that stuff. It looks just like a hospital. So when you go in there, you get the true feel of being in that environment. So once again, when you're in there, we're in the clinics or you're in the wards, it's not a scary thing the first time you step in there, your third year. You've had 2 years of experience of doing things in a testing center where you've practiced your skills and you're able to go into those third years confidently. And that's also, like I said, we're going to integrate the nursing program as well, doing things together in the SIM Center.
Okay. And could you touch on TrueMed, the Tulane Rural Medical Education Program? I think it's another special program at Tulane.
Yes.
Obviously in Louisiana.
It's going to sound like a broken record, but once again, adds to that
different community.
Different communities, yes. And so part of that is because if you go outside 30 minutes to 40 minutes outside of New Orleans, you're in a rural setting. I know like people think of New Orleans, this is big, you know, people think of Bourbon Street. We try to not say, hey, that's tourists. That's not the city. And so, but once you leave the city, Louisiana is very much a rural state. And we're trying to address the shortages of physicians in those rural communities, especially down here in Louisiana in the Deep South. And so part of our program is to have these students do a curriculum that's focused on rural medicine. And then some of their third year clerkship rotations will be out in those communities. And so, yes, it's housed under family medicine, but within family medicine in a rural setting, you'd be doing a lot of stuff. You know, you might do some surgical procedures. You might be doing some OGBYN. You're going to be doing some family medicine. You're going to be doing some patient literacy and so forth. So you'd be doing all that stuff in that setting, because that might be the only doctor in that community. And so they have to learn a lot. They have to do a lot. And so our students are really focused on, those students that decide to follow that path are really focused on learning about that particular population segment. And most of our students that are really focused on that come from those communities. And I see on their essays all the time that they're like, they had to travel an hour to see a physician, or they want to actually go back to the community and be that doctor and a physician in that community and so forth. And so it's good to get trained in that specific care, because people think medicine is medicine, whereas depending on where you're at, medicine is not just medicine. It's a lot of nuances, and that's what we try to open their eyes to.
I would assume the rural medicine doctor or somebody specializing in rural medicine has to be more of a generalist. I have to specialize in being a generalist.
That is so correct.
Yeah, so because the resources aren't there.
Our students have done a lot of the rotations there. They've come back and said, oh my gosh, like the stuff I've done, you know, and compared to their peers that maybe just done in hospitals here, they're like, what do you mean you like had to assist with the surgery? I thought you were in family medicine. Well, what are you talking about? You assisted with the birth of a child. I thought you were, you know, doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah, not doing OB, right.
And they have to be kind of the jack of all trades.
That's what I would assume. I mean, I'm in Los Angeles. My husband once had something on his hand. He went to the doctor and the doctor said, well, I have a fellowship. Mark said, it's on my right hand. My husband said, it's on my right hand. And he says, well, I have a fellowship in my right hand. And he joked and he said, do you also have a fellowship? What about your left? What about the left hand? He says, I have a fellowship in that too. But I mean, that's that kind of specialization you can only have really in a large urban area.
Yes, definitely. And it's I guarantee there may not be a special certificate about it, but I guarantee the people in rural medicine can do a little bit of everything.
That's so. Right. They treat both hands and elbows right. and knees, etc. Yeah. Right.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it was like he was kidding. The second question, he was joking. All right. Right. Anyways, now let's turn to the application and a little bit more about admissions. Tulane secondary from the website appears to be automatically sent. What are you trying to glean from the secondary that you don't get from the primary? And you have a pretty thorough secondary. I'm looking at the questions.
Well, we try to keep it shorter, I would say, but try to extract information out that really like why us. And we also want to make the applicants think a little bit more about themselves. I'm all about self-reflection questions. I want people to really dive into why they want to go down this path, why they want us on this journey that they're on. And when I talk to these groups, special groups all the time, you know, the first thing I say is self-reflection. Please do that deep dive in self-reflection. After you've done all your homework on different websites and doing your research and that kind of stuff, come back and still do self-reflection now that you learn all this other information. And so that's what we're trying to get on that secondary, get them to think about themselves, not to have too many tricky questions per se, but just look at the why medicine, why physician, why Tulane, all that kind of wrapped in essentially three questions, pretty much.
The primary kind of addresses the why medicine. You know, that's certainly part of what the primary application does. You know, the secondary doesn't move away from that, so it doesn't. But I think it's, you know, you already got that information, you know.
Well, it gives them a chance to say why medicine here, because you when you're doing your primary, of course you want to keep it as general as possible. But now's the time for them to, if they really want whatever school they're applying to, if they really want us to really focus on the why medicine here. And not just at Tulane University School of Medicine, but why New Orleans? Because the community's part of us, we're part of the community. Why us? Why, you know, it's a package deal. You can't separate one or the other. So that's what we're kind of gleaning. I'm trying to glean from our secondaries, but also making sure they really did a deep dive into themselves as well.
And that they're not just looking at rankings and just looking at your questions. You know, it's pretty obvious that you don't want somebody to just look at rankings or throw darts at a dartboard and picking medical schools. They have to know something about New Orleans. The first part of question number two is, what disparities in health do you believe are pertinent to the New Orleans patient population? How would you attempt to address them as a medical student at Tulane? And you may support your answer by using past involvement, working in a similar patient population, et cetera. So it goes on a little bit more.
Yes.
You give them a whopping 150 words to do it, but it would require some thought on their part, research and thought.
Right. And once again, that's what we want. We don't want them to be able to copy and paste and take out the name of another school and put it into our secondary. Every secondary is going to have a why, their school. But this takes it a little further and also gives them a chance to maybe dive into a little bit of the things they've done and how it compares to what they could be doing while they're here in the city.
Right. No. Excellent question, by the way. any do you plan any changes for the upcoming application cycle in terms of your secondary?
It's funny when I start off saying like, you don't want any gotcha moments, but I kind of want to tweak it a little bit just because I don't want people, because I know our questions are out there on the web.
Yeah. And everything,
mm-hmm. And I don't like when people do their question. They have months and months and months. I really want them to kind of think about it on the spot, because I feel like the answers are within yourself, you know, pretty much. And so we want people to think. So I don't foresee us changing it too much. There might be an interview prompt, like a video interview prompt.
Mm.
We're in discussions with that. We don't know yet how we're going to implement that, or if we're going to implement that right. This cycle. But once again, it will take away from the copy and pasting, because you can't copy and paste, you know, a video. But then also it might shed a little bit of light on how they might do in a video, since we're going to be doing video virtual interviews. So right. it kind of helps us with that aspect as well.
Are you going to keep the COVID question, or do you know?
Oh, we're going to probably keep that. I think we'll still have maybe 1 or 2 years for that, just because people, if they're reapplicants, they've gone through the height of COVID, mm-hmm. not as way, but the height of COVID, and it still affects people's application. Whether I know the overall answer is sometimes they're like, oh, I couldn't get this shadowing opportunity, I couldn't get this research opportunity, but also it affects people. Like it affected my family because a family member got sick or a family member died. Family dynamics have changed. Maybe they had to be the breadwinner and they couldn't do certain things that they wanted to do, or it intensified their passion for medicine because it affected their family in a certain way. And so I think it does still have value. That question still does have value.
Okay, great. What makes an application jump off the page for you in a positive way?
Oh, gotcha. Yes. Well, plenty of ways to make it negative, you know.
Yeah, right, right.
I always talk up to groups of people, and that's usually the number one question, you know, in thousands and thousands of applications, how do I stand out? And I always tell people, honestly, it's not that hard. And they look at me kind of sideways. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's hard. And I tell people, just be yourself. So many times people go to the internet or they go to friends and they're like, oh, everyone's doing this, so I'm going to do this. And I was like, that's one way not to stand out, if you sound like everyone else. And so it's only one of you. So just be yourself this entire process. Don't try to cater your application based on what you think the school is going to hear or like, because most of the time you're going to get it wrong. Just be yourself. The schools, and not just our medical school, I know plenty of people in the field, they just want to know about the person as an individual. Are they genuine? Are they honest? What are their insights? Why do they do things? You know?
Motivation.
People try to check off boxes. We got it. But what led you down this path of picking a particular activity? And what did you get out of it? And I tell people all the time, if you do that, you will tell us more about yourself than a standard, I like medicine because, and list all your activities you've done.
I want to help people.
Right. I want to help people. And always, you know, when I interview people and say, I want to help people, I was like, oh, well, you could be a banker and give out low interest loans. You could
my standard answer to that is, why aren't you a plumber?
Yeah, that is true. They are in need and when you need them. So.
That's absolutely right. A lot shorter education, some similarities in terms of what you're doing. But anyway. So,
And so just be yourself in the entire process, because only you have the experience something the way you've experienced it. So even if everyone shadows, everyone research, whatever the case may be, your experience of that shadowing is going to be different. Your motivations for pursuing that shadowing is going to be different than someone else. Your lessons learned from that shadowing is going to be different than everyone else. And once you start doing that, we get a good picture of who you are as a person instead of a list of accomplishments. And then those are the ones who can master that or comfortable with that, because the internet sometimes will tell you contrary, don't do that. If they do that, they start to stand out, and we can close our eyes and almost picture the person possibly being in front of us in an interview and possibly being a med student here.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great answer. And if you combine that response with your comment about self-reflection, you know, I think you just unlock the key there to create essays.
Sometimes for these science people, it's hard to turn down the science brain. And sometimes turn up the humanistic side a little bit.
I guess so. Yeah. And some people also just, one of my kids, like, she hated writing and talking about herself. She was actually much, much more on the humanities, social science side, but did not want to, it was like, it won't work. Now, you also encourage people to take the CASPER and the DWET. You do not require it. What role does it play when applicants have taken it and you have those results? And if not, is not taking it at all a negative?
Yeah, and I will say that, full disclosure, we know a lot of schools require it, so we know we're going to get it anyway. So I just, one of the, as a school, we just don't like keep putting barriers in front of applicants, because now we're just adding more tests, we're adding extra costs, we're adding extra time and resources. And so we encourage it, we don't require it. And right now we're still in the learning phase for CASPER and DWET, as far as how we're going to use it. I mean, I am good friends with the CASPER people. I talk to them routinely, and they'll be the first ones to tell you that it really only correlates to possibly the third and fourth years of medical school. And so we've been only using it for 5 or 6 years or so. And so but if it's focused on the back end, we've only had about 3 classes that have gone, you know, that have, that, where the correlation might.
Yeah. Yeah. Play out. I hear what you're saying.
And so we're still looking at to see how we're going to use it. There's still an educational curve with our committee to figure out, because some people on the committee, you know, have been doing it so long, you know, there's sometimes you're still trying to figure out the new MCAT score. So we're educating the committee on that, how it's going to be used, what's it about, and so forth. So we're still in those planning phases. Now, I could see maybe 2 or 3 cycles from now, maybe us requiring it. But for now, we're still keeping it. We encourage it, but it's not required. And it is not going to hinder someone's applications based on whatever they get.
Okay. All right. Great. So you're requiring it almost as much now for your own education as to evaluate applicants, it sounds like.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, you've emphasized authenticity, the importance of self-reflection and authenticity in your essays. What do you think of applicants using ChatGPT or something similar, AI?
Oh, that's the bane of my existence. and it's because I think applicants don't realize that we can tell when a computer writes something versus something's authentic. Now, maybe I know it's getting better, and I know certain schools are implementing anti-AI software and so forth, but for the most part, we can tell when it's almost too perfect. And then when it doesn't really answer the question, or it gets into a lot of things that are so specific, especially about New Orleans, like, why would you even think to put that in your application? And so you can kind of see what it is. But then it also comes very apparent that you've AI'd your application when you come in the interview and you don't sound anything like your application. the different words you use, the tone, what things excite you versus, you know, on paper, what excites you versus when you get in front of the interviewer and you're talking about stuff and you seem bored to the stuff that excites you on your paper, but you talk about something totally different that excites you. It really comes apparent that someone else or a computer heavily influenced your application. And so I know people do it. I know our med students tell us all the time, like, oh, it's pretty easy to do it this way, this way, this way. And in my head, I'm like, talking to them, like, oh, wow, that's great. But in the back of my mind, I'm like getting intel on it, you know, and so forth. But I wish they won't do it. And I wish they really would do that self-reflection on themselves to figure out, Is this the right place for them? Is this the right profession for them? Just so they don't think, I'm good at science, I should be a doctor. Everyone told me I should be a doctor. And then when you get these self-reflection questions, I don't know, let me just have a computer write it for you. That doesn't seem genuine, and that doesn't seem like it's going to play out well when you actually get a live person doing your interview in front of you.
It's true. True. Great feedback. Thank you. What makes for a great interview when there can't be ChatGPT or something? What makes for a great interview? Let's leave the question at that.
All right.
No perfect. Qualifications.
All right. So I will say this. I say this in front of every, at the beginning of every single interview day we have. I say, we don't want robots. So, and be yourself. I know these are super smart people. I know they've probably overthought this process a lot. So they've practiced and practiced and practiced, which is perfectly fine. And it's funny because I, sorry to go on about this, but it's
no,
it's
go ahead.
I start off with like, so when someone tells you hello, that's not the time to jump into your elevator speech. and you see some people's face, like, you know, the eyes light up and that kind of
really?
Stuff. Because like, oh, I was planning on doing that. I hope they won't. But and so it's very interesting. So don't want robots, be yourself, be interesting, because the entire time we just want to get to know the individual. We don't have any preset questions that we tell our interviewers to ask. Our students are part of the interview process just as much as our faculty. And we just want to get genuine, honest answers, not the canned answers. It's very easy when you're doing Zoom interviews to have your questions up on your answers that to, you know, some questions, some topics you think about up on the screen.
Sure.
Please don't do that, because it's so easy to tell when people are reading questions. And that will certainly be a negative interview. And I've read the comments from some of our interviewers that said they read their entire questions, their answers. You can see their eyes moving and so forth. So please, you know, go over some stuff about the school, but just be yourself. There's not going to be questions that you're going to need a encyclopedia, calculator, or whatever, look up anything. They're mainly questions about maybe your experiences, your thoughts, and just when people are just being curious, usually, and just be yourself.
Sounds like a good piece of advice. Can you review Tulane Medical's policy regarding updates at different phases in the application process? Before interview, after interview, if waitlisted?
We encourage it through the entire process. We know that when you submit your application in May and June, July, you could be doing stuff when it finally gets to review part in September, October, November, not a problem. So update it beforehand. You can update it, you know, after you get an interview, update it after you get a decision, where there is a wait list and so forth. We honestly have people update their interviews because once people are admitted, they're automatically considered for scholarships. So there's no scholarship application. And so that's why we like, hey, update it even after you're admitted, because all that's going to be taken in consideration during the scholarship review process as well. So it's very easy to do, and we encourage people to do it all the time. Now, we also tell people, don't be updating just so you can have an update. We don't need to know that you helped your neighbor cross the street and you got an hour community service for that. We don't need that. But if it's anything substantial, please let us know.
All right. How do you view shadowing? I sometimes see people, some people say shadowing's worthless, it's passive. Other people say you need to have 100 hours of shadowing to apply. For Tulane Medical, what's your advice?
Oh, shadowing.
Yeah. You mentioned it earlier, but.
Yeah, I will, first of all, our committee and me myself, I understand that shadowing sometimes is a privileged activity. Sometimes because people are like, oh, my aunt, she was a doctor, so I went in her office and shadowed her. My family connection got a connection to someone, so they allowed me to shadow. Whereas some people who don't know anyone in a position wouldn't even know how to even go about that. Besides maybe just asking their own pediatrician or their doctor, hey, can I follow you around? So I know it's a privileged activity that not everyone has an opportunity for. So I'm not going to penalize anyone who doesn't have shadowing. And I know shadowing takes on different aspects depending on where you're doing it and who you're doing it with. Is it good to get exposure into clinical medicine? Of course. But I, and a lot of people here that reviews applications, rather see more hands-on clinical exposure. So whether that's, and I would say the same thing with scribing too, but scribing, depending on where you're scribing, you might be the medical assistant essentially. You got to really describe that in your application. But we really much rather see some type of clinical exposure that hands-on, whether it's EMS, whether a lot of people are now being certified nurses aides or nursing assistants, medical assistants, volunteering in certain clinical settings. So one, you're not only just seeing what the physician does, but you're also getting other aspects of the medical field, the interactions, the collaborations that go on between different medical personnel. And so that, not to say like if you don't have that, it's going to be a detriment to your application, but don't, shadowy is not the end all be all. I'll just leave it like that.
Okay. And what about virtual shadowing? Does that have any value? I mean, again, we were talking about COVID a minute ago, a couple of minutes ago, actually. But I mean, that was pretty much the only option, you know, during the height of the epidemic. So what is Tulane's view on that now?
Virtual shadowing, it can be an asset. It can give you a glimpse of medicine, especially since a lot of healthcare now is going to virtual visits, you know, set an appointment over the phone. I've even done it a couple of times. Thought it was a little weird at first, but I got used to it. So it can have some value for it. But once again, not the end all be all.
Right. Maybe it's a place to start exploring clinical medicine, but a poor place to end it.
Correct. If that's your only exposure to medicine, it's going to be hard for you to understand all other aspects of medicine.
Right. Right. And it is passive, as we both have said.
Very, very much.
Right. We're getting calls. And of course, you read about it out there. Many applicants are at this point concluding that they are rejected this cycle.
Yes.
Right. They are thinking about a reapplication. How would you recommend they approach the reapplication process?
One, please don't call or email our office. I always tell people that.
Okay.
And it's not because we're a big, mean medical school. It's because if you think about it, we get 15,000 applications. Oh. We can't possibly give advice to 14,500 of them, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But for the most part, it goes back to that self-reflection. You know, why did you pick our school? Like, what was the rationale behind that? And does your wants and needs out of a medical school education actually matches up with what we can offer you in a medical school education? If it's just kind of throwing a dartboard and like, oh, because the average number of people, the number of schools people apply to now is 20. I think that's ridiculous. Right. Those are all probably 20 different schools. So it can't possibly, you know, match up your need to wherever that particular school. And so do that self-reflection and then be brutally honest with yourself. So many times, and then I see it when people email, and they still email and call our school. And I glance to see, like, is it anything I could tell them? And I just pull up like their application right off the bat. I'm like, well, one, why did you apply the deadline? That's a big no-no. Every medical school will tell you don't apply. You don't submit your application, whatever the deadline is, at the deadline. That doesn't show any interest in us. Second, I hate to put everything on stats, but if you have a significantly lower GPA MCAT than just our average, then that should be a clue as well. As what you could have done or improved on, especially if you've got struggled with your science GPA, yet have maybe done a post-bac program or got a master's program or just taken any other additional classes to prove that you can handle upper level sciences, that could be a clue as well. And sometimes I don't think they do that. I think they want people to tell them what to do. And if they do that, they're going to medical school. And there are no guarantees in medical school. I don't care if you have a 525 and a 4.0, that's still not a guarantee. So just overall reflecting on what you want to get out of this process. What do you want to get out of your education? And then being honest with yourself as far as looking over your application and saying like, oh, well, this is probably the reason why.
So first would be evaluating what went wrong, essentially.
Correct.
All right. And then I guess step two would be fixing it.
Trying to do whatever you can to fix it, whether that's most of the time people rush the process. Well, it might take two cycles to go through, or maybe sitting out a cycle to get whatever you need fixed on your application, whether it's just being more exposure to medicine, clinical experiences, whether it's retaking classes or doing a master's or doing a post-bac program, or taking the time to really study the MCAT and do well in the MCAT. Instead of just, oh, I did bad. Let me sign up for the next month to do it. That's usually a recipe for disaster.
Right. How do you view multiple MCAT scores since we're on the topic?
Well, for us, we don't care. We just take the highest score.
All right.
We don't super score anything. We don't look at sub scores. We're just looking at the highest score. And so, and I know that's different from other schools, but for us, we just look at the highest score.
Okay, great. All right. So it's now March 19th as we're recording this. And we are roughly 2.5 months away from the opening of MCAS for the 2024.
Oh, don't remind me. I want a little bit of a break.
2024-2025 cycle. What should applicants be doing now in order to get that application in June, which is obviously, you know, ideally when they should be doing it?
Correct. One, have that deadline in your date, whether it's June 1st. You don't have to be, I hate to pick on the California people, but you don't have to be like the most of the California people at 12:01, right after midnight, hitting submit on it. Please don't get a good night's sleep. You can do it the next day. But for the most part, right now, you should be focusing on your strategy on what schools do I really want to apply to. I mean, that you're going to have most of your primary application done. That's the same regardless. But really doing that, once again, self-reflection and figuring out what schools I want to apply to. Where can I see myself at? And be, once again, really honest with yourself. To the point where I know people want to get in medical school, but if cold weather makes you miserable, why are you applying to only schools in cold weather? You know, medical school is hard enough already. You should know yourself enough to know that, hey, maybe I don't thrive in an environment that is a big city or I need to be somewhat closer to a family setting or so forth. Those are things that may seem superficial at first, but if it's going to help you succeed in medical school, it's important in your choices where to apply. So think about those things. Don't try to like jam in 50 different activities right now. people reading applications are going to see through that. I compare it to when you're in college, and I used to be an undergrad admissions person, and their junior year of high school, you see they're joining every single club and organization because it looks great in a college application. People do that for medical school as well. And so this is not the time to try to jam in all that stuff. Really focus on the things you're passionate about and continuing to do in the things that you're passionate about. Quantity is not always the greatest thing. Quality is better.
For sure. For sure. Now, in looking at the process overall, you know, whether we're talking about a first-time applicant or a reapplicant, what do you think is the biggest challenge they're facing? What causes the most problems or digs the deepest rabbit holes for applicants?
Oh, I'm going to get a little philosophical right now.
Okay.
and I'm going to say this because I was interviewing with someone a couple of weeks ago, and they mentioned this, and I wrote this quote down, and I think it's very important. The thief of joy is comparison.
Oh, that is good. Oh, is that good? Go ahead.
So many times when people, whether they're first-time applicants or reapplicants, they spend the most of their time comparing themselves to others. And they're not valuing the things that they can bring to the table. They're just realizing like, oh, I don't have this because someone else did this. And I was at the WMC National Conference in November in Seattle. And I was giving this talk to a bunch of pre-med students. And I quite honestly said, all of y'all lie. You're lying to people on the internet. You're lying to people. Oh, I've done this research. I've done that. You're over-exaggerating things. You're lying. And all that is making the people who are trying to compare themselves to those people freak out so much because they don't have that experience. So they don't have thousands of hours of research, 1,000 hours of clinical experience. And so just stop comparing yourself to others. Be happy on the things that you've done. Once again, brutally honest, did you do the things you did because you genuinely enjoy them, you genuinely like them, you're genuinely curious about them, or you're just kind of following the crowd? And then you're not standing out. So figure out what brings you joy and stop comparing yourself to others. And like I said, it gets a little philosophical, but I wish people would realize that throughout this entire process.
I think it's a fantastic piece of advice. it will allow you, again, getting back to your point earlier about self-reflection, the time that you're spending comparing yourself to Joe and Sally is not time you're spending figuring out what's important to you.
Correct.
Okay.
It boggles my mind that you waste that energy trying to chase others' accomplishments and not worry about the things that fulfill you and your own accomplishments.
Right.
And looking out and seeing like, all right, I've done this, even if it's non-science related, non-medicine related, it can still give you skills and attributes that will make you a successful physician. Our Dr. Chakraborty here, he's our dean of education here, and he says it best, like sometimes just being the best bartender, waitress, retail salesperson, just focusing on that and focusing on what you get out of that is transferable skills. And so many times that people are like, oh, well, I didn't do that, so I can't apply to medical school, or I'm not going to put that in a medical school application. When he will tell you, like, he's an internal medicine doctor, his only job is to talk to strangers and get them to talk to him and trust them about certain things. You learn that from doing those other occupations, other activities. So focus on the things that you do well in this entire process and stop comparing yourselves to others.
Right. I sometimes post on the Student Doctor Network forums, and there was a post, I think it was about a year ago, and it really bothered me. It really bothered me because the fellow posting was basically saying that he had been rejected and he knew he was a better applicant than some other people that got accepted. And it's very unfair and blah, 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 blah. And he thinks he's going to go for a PhD instead. And I actually responded, if you want to go for a PhD, you know, great, fine, but it's not going to be, yeah, exactly. You just did it. But it's not going to be an easier process than medical school. It's demanding in its own way.
Yes.
But you got to stop comparing yourself. You don't know what those people put on their application. You have no idea what they wrote. You have no idea what are the priorities of the schools. Well, you might have some idea that they applied to, as opposed to what you applied to, even if it was the same, school, he still might have those priorities, but that's a different problem. But the idea that he was so convinced that he is better, the opposite problem, actually, of what you were describing, people who basically have imposter syndrome because they're comparing themselves to others. This guy was convinced that the others were the imposters. But the quote you started with, comparison is the thief of joy, is 100% right. Take pride in what you've done, focus on that, and focus on fit with the schools.
And that you said it perfectly.
No, you did.
I have once again, you know, people reach out about why they didn't get in, and they might have friends theirs that got in. And the first thing they say is, well, my MCAT score is better than their MCAT score. How come they got in and I didn't get in? And I try to let them know, it's if you're only focusing on the stats, then you're missing out on the entire thing that what we're looking for in general, but overall what medicine is about and a medical education is about. And honestly, granted, there's some schools out there that just look at stats. That's fine. Everyone has their own mission. But for the most part, schools want to see human beings. They want doctors who can relate to patients, whatever patient population they plan to serve. And just having a high MCAT score is not going to do it. I've never been to a doctor's office and said, excuse me, doctor, what's your MCAT score? What's your MCAT score?
Yeah, you know, 30 years.
I've never said that.
Yeah, no, that's 100% great point. Great point. I also, you know, we've had clients come to us or applicants come to us, and sometimes they became clients. I got rejected despite my high GPA, despite my high MCAT. You know, what did I do wrong? What went wrong? I got, you know, I wrote good essays. Well, no, they really weren't quite as good as you thought. Anyways, sure, right.
If they lead off with those two statements, the rest of the application probably sounds like those first two statements.
Right. Exactly. Maybe a little arrogant. Right. But anyways.
You said it, not me.
I did. That's right. And considering your emphasis on teamwork throughout our conversation, arrogance just will kill it.
It will. And especially at a school like ours where we value collaboration.
Community.
It's cutthroat, you know, atmosphere with our students, value community. We don't want people talking down to patients, talking to patients. It's just because you know more about medicine than the patient, it's still a partnership in their health. And you got to meet them where they're at. And so getting people to realize that and understand that, and arrogance is not going to get you that.
No, not at all. Maybe pride in what you've done, but without the arrogance is kind of the balance that will get you where you need to go. What would you have liked me to ask you?
Oh, wow. We covered a lot today.
We definitely did.
I will say that if people want to know more, I'll just go off with the number three question people ask me during the interviews. Like, when I say, like, what question do you have of me? What is it like living in New Orleans? Because they have this perception of what they see on Mardi Gras Day, which one, Mardi Gras is a whole like weeks long festival. It's not just one. It's not just Fat Tuesday. It's a weeks long festival. And it's more family fun entertainment. It's great. But living in New Orleans is a city like no other. I've lived in a couple different cities throughout my life. And it's unique because most cities, you know, they have their identity. And if a newcomer comes in, they might be somewhat welcoming, but like, if you don't know about this little thing or that little thing, you're not going to have too many people that maybe reach out to like try to explain it to you. But here in New Orleans, everyone's trying to get you to be a part of them, whether it's different traditions, whether it's culture, whether it's different foods. It's such a welcoming city. It's a laid back city. It's funny how a lot of our students that may come from Caribbean countries were like, oh my gosh, this reminds me of home. You know, so laid back. Sometimes it's a little too laid back for most people. That's fine. We still like it. That environment really does seep in our school, which lends to the non-competitive environment here with really overly trying to reach out and make sure people succeed. It's not weeding out. It's not like, oh, well, if you didn't get this first exam, you're not going to be a good doctor. No, it's really trying to reach out and help people. And then also with that being with the city, being in the school, being in the city, really focusing on that, I guess the new term might be out there, is that value-based care that we're trying to instill into our students. And that value-based care is really helping out and looking for our community. Once again, healing communities. And so living in New Orleans, it's great. I mean, today it's cold. I'm using quotation marks, cold, because it's only supposed to be in the 60s. It's cold here, but it's a fun city. It has everything big cities have to offer, but in a smaller version. And everyone's just very welcoming here in the city. So I enjoy living in the city. Our students love being in the city, and they've embraced the city as well.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Mike. I think we're almost out of time. This has been just a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. Where can listeners learn more about Tulane University School of Medicine?
Perfect. You can go to our website, try to make it easier. This medicine.tulane.edu. They can email me anytime. I do not, you know, I'd rather talk to people than stare at spreadsheets and applications all the time. So they can email me at mwoodson, mwoodson, at tulane.edu. And we try to make our website very interactive as it can be. So with lots of videos with students, please visit our student life page, because that will kind of give you a good picture of how it's like to be a student here at Tulane.
Great. Wonderful suggestions. We're going to include links in the show notes at tipa.com/569 to Tulane University School of Medicine, as well as to other resources that might be helpful to you listeners. Listener, thank you too for joining us for our 569th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with deans, admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. And a last reminder, take the med school admissions quiz. See if you're really ready to apply and learn what you need to do to improve your chances of acceptance. Take the quiz today at accepted.com/medquiz. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.